Reading 12, First Years with the Foreign Service. My year's probation with the Foreign Service in India flashed by. See and be seen was my mentor Mickey's favourite motto. On horseback by his side, I roamed the PA's territory around Bareilly. Diffuse trouble before there is a problem, Mickey's other favourite. Failed crops, bony cattle, nothing escaped his magnifying glass. Dispensing British law, he settled marital and land disputes. He sat at court, and to my shock, appointed me magistrate third class. Don't worry, Hugh, he comforted. I'll review every case and advise on sentencing. When you become a full magistrate, your turn will come to sentence a man, to be hanged by the neck until you are dead. Feel it. See it. Fully understand the finality of killing a fellow human being. My turn did come, and I did. Just when I had a better understanding of the Indian culture and laws, Mickey handed me a telegraph. Congratulations, Hugh. You're appointed personal assistant to the British resident and chief commissioner in Aden. Another continent, another culture, another beginning. I spoke no Arabic, knew nothing about the people or the purpose of our British presence. In Aden, I wore a strange mix of hats. Personal assistant, harbour magistrate, governor of the jail, and superintendent of the gardens of Sheikh Othman. I took advantage of each one. My job description included greeting infinitely forgettable officials off the stream of liners docking in Aden. Dressed in white, a spiked helmet on my head, I'd escort them ashore in the official launch. A few stand out. Evelyn Waugh, on his way to Addis Ababa as Times correspondent, Haile Selassie, King Alfonso, and the explorer, botanist, and renowned collector John Boscawen. It was my job to fuss over and entertain them. I'd been in Aden about a year when His Imperial Majesty, Emperor Haile Selassie, Emperor of Abyssinia, steamed into harbour, accompanied by his two sons and uncle, as collateral against a coup d'etat, it was rumoured. The Emperor had hardly anchored when King Alfonso of Spain's luxury liner also pulled into port. Dilemma. Should an ex-king married to a British princess or a ruling emperor sit in the place of honour at the residence right? A ruling emperor took precedence over an ex-king, I decided, after a furious consultation. My choice did not go unnoticed. Haile Selassie, the Lion King, invested me Chevalier of the Order of Menelik II, so named after an ancestral Ethiopian emperor descended from the Queen of Sheba. A photo, dated 1932, shows me, buttons straining in a too-tight white suit in the back row, standing behind the Lion King's two boy princes. Missing, a pair of his famed black-maned lions. One weekly duty was to deliver the diplomatic bag to the lone British administrator of Kamaran Island, whose peculiar job was disinfecting Indian and Muslim pilgrims en route to Jeddah. Strapped into the Wapiti's rear seat in the open cockpit, returning from my weekly run with hot wind blasting my face, the pilot soared into the blue, cut engine, and swooped silently seaward, with gulls skimming the Red Sea, startling fishermen on the dhows. One time, flying back to Aden, I shouted down the intercom, "How about a look at the dollar war?" Grinning, the pilot turned around, thumbs up. "Don't blame me if we ditch the mile," he yelled, banking sharply to port towards the mud fort occupied by the British levies. We flew low over the steeply terraced hills of the Yemen, where white fortified villages clung dizzily to arid precipices. In shadowy ravines, streams flashed silver in the sun. Burnt sienna mountains dwindled to pale foothills and melted into vast yellow sand dunes of desert sea. "There! Lahey Oasis!" Following the pilot's finger, I made out a blemish in the haze. I'd visited Lahej during the SS Assay's stopover from England to the 19-year-old so excited by the world oasis, I'd braved the heat and taken the narrow-gauge train with my friends to see one. Dallas Mud Fort swooped into view. The nose dipped sharply earthwards, setting the plane bumping and bucketing in hot air pockets. Intermittent puffs of cotton wool smoked from the hillside above the mud village, 500 feet below us. 2-inch mortar fire, the pilot pointed. At first I couldn't make the rebels out. Ant-sized Yemeni tribesmen swarmed the far slope of a hill. Tally-ho! The pilot hollered as he tipped earthward in a steep dive. 50 feet from the crest he pulled out, skimming the hill while I hung by my straps over the side of the fuselage, popping off harmless emergency flares from a Very pistol, the nearest thing resembling a weapon on board. The bluff worked. Panicked groups scattered, ducking behind rocks and hurling flat to the ground. Back in Aden, my boss, Pop Riley, was not amused. "If you'd been shot down, you would have caused a lot of trouble to all concerned," he grumbled. "And what about His Majesty's mail?" The expression on his face showed he'd have done the same. "Superintendent of the Gardens of Sheikh Othman." Pop Riley, the PA's birthday, loomed. "Where only scrubby trees had grown before, I created the residency garden. Perhaps," I suggested, "to the Sultan of Lahej, you'd consider giving 100 camel loads of sweet earth from your oasis." To Sheikh Othman, I suggested 6-foot saplings, shrubs, and flowers. As superintendent of the jail, I gave myself permission to commandeer prisoners' labor for my project. The prisoners hacked through salt, earth, and rock to a depth of 4 feet, filled the hole with concrete, loose rubble, and the sweet Lahej soil. I ordered. They built. A high 3-sided wall soon protected the enclosure from the Red Sea's salt-laden wind. I myself patted in the sheikh's trees, shrubs, and flowers in redded holes and seeded the grass lawn. The 4th side opened to the broad veranda of the residency. Approaching from the front, Government House stood isolated, so as grandly bare and windswept as ever. But push open the wicket gate and be transported to a magical English flower garden set in a green lawn beneath shade trees and sunken rose garden encircling a sundial. High water charges and 2 extra gardeners needed for its upkeep made it an expensive but wondrous gift. The Aden community flocked to admire its peaceful beauty. Much admired by Pop's visitors, hollyhock, wallflower and nightstock seeds and dahlia and iris roots poured in from every homeland. Haile Selassie sent roses, King Alfonso of Spain sent mimosa cuttings, and Evelyn Waugh clematis. When I passed through Aden in 1958, the garden was still there, the trees mature, the flowers blooming, and the sundial pointing the time of day. That mini-Eden in a barren land is my mark on earth that makes me proud. If I was standing at the pearly gates and asked what I had achieved on earth, I would say, "A garden in the desert. I created that."